Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?
Sonitos tuo, usuncarum, umbularum, delectatque, contremescit me. Intra.
All four parties are in the room with Rudolph,
the red-nosed reindeer,
and
Vixen.
But you have permission. It's your winter wonderland. Are you fucking going down the chimney tonight?
Is it
going
to be a white Christmas or
it's
not?
It's going to be a white Christmas.
Hell yeah! Let's start the pod. And 13th and L is back with the holiday episode 2022, wrapping it up, heading into the new year. Welcome, Elmers. This year we are sitting around the Yule log and watching Black Christmas, Bob Clark's 1974 classic Black Christmas. We're going to have a lot to say about this. Let's get into it. Rob, Bill, say hi.
Hey. What's up, guys?
Did you guys have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
The travel to and from was frustrating, but everything else was pretty good, all in all.
Well, we're all here. We're together. We're in one piece, and we're doing the holiday episode. It's, a little past Christmas for most everybody. Actually, everybody. Same calendar for all of us.
Well, no, actually, mostly some everybody. Of us are Russian Orthodox and Greek Orthodox, and so Christmas has not happened yet.
Well,
whatever.
It's good.
All I'm saying to all our Orthodox brothers and sisters out there, I wish you a Merry Christmas come January 7th, as per your calendar.
Yes, and to all of you, indeed, happy
Ukrainian
Shalom.
Brothers, yes. Well, Hanukkah happened a while ago, but yeah, also
whatever,
that,
I'm talking about the Orthodox. All right, so this movie is 1974. It's directed by Bob Clark. You guys might know the name because he's had a storied and checkered and wild, checkered, I don't think that's accurate, but a wild film career in Hollywood. He has done this film. Another classic Christmas film he's done was A Christmas Story, Ralphie.
Christmas Story, yeah.
He's done Porky's, classic comedy in the 70s.
Yep.
He also did Baby Geniuses, which we'll be watching later tonight. Stick around for that, Bill. And He's kind of done a little bit of everything, but if you ask me, it's really easy to tell you what his best film is, and it's this one by a mile for me.
It's so crazy.
I know some people like I like Porky's, and some people like Christmas Story, but
I was going to say, sorry, it's like so insane that he's made like two of the most popular Christmas movies, and they're so different.
Yeah.
He's like a classical bard.
Kind of, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like he's just a good storyteller, and he's macabre, he has family, he has
comedy,
like kind of crude comedy, sexy, baldry, I guess, tales.
Yeah.
He's like a skald, in like a Norwegian sense or whatever, of the sagas. Respect.
Yeah, this film is actually pretty widely
funny.
It's pretty well written. It's funny. It's well acted. But it's pretty widely regarded as one of the better horror movies. From like that classic genre or classic era of the 70s. Like we've talked about, some great, great horror movies came out in that time. Whether you put Jaws in that category or Alien, some of these ones that are just outside or suspense, but everything in between, from The Omen, Exorcist, Black Christmas, Halloween, it's right up there with the best of the best. And it came out a few years before Halloween. It's clearly got some inspiration from the giallo. That point of view, the hands,
the red herring.
Yeah, the red herring. The beautiful women. It's a little bit different, though, and this movie actually is quite a bit different than some of the slashers that would follow it, I think. Maybe Halloween, at least the first one, escapes kind of some of the tropes, but definitely by the time we get to 1980 and Friday the 13th comes in, it's a lot of sexualization and a lot of punishing the young and stupid like victims in the slasher movies. It's kind of like a new way for them to die. You don't cheer for them. You cheer for the killers. This watches a lot more like a suspense, like the giallo mystery type of thing. But also you care about the characters and it doesn't fall victim to all the like, oh, the women are alone and they get naked and they like have sex. So they have to die because they're not representing like moral purity. I don't know. It seems to be a step beyond their aggression that would come in the years shortly after when the slashers kind of boomed up.
Yeah, I mean, the characters actually have personalities and backstories, and it lends you to, like, I remember the names of the characters in this movie, and there's so many movies I re-review where it's like, you know, and even in my notes as I'm watching it, I'm like, you know, girl one gets, you know, head split open, like, girl two. Because like you said, they're just there to, you know, take off their clothes and get murdered. But this doesn't have any of that, which Giallo had a lot of that. And this didn't even really have a lot of on-screen violence. It's not very gory. And, I mean, that kind of rents itself to that classic feel as well. There's not...
Less is more type of like,
yeah,
70s
like
approach,
said,
like in Halloween
more,
too.
It's more suspenseful. Honestly, like some of the language and like some of the other themes are like what's more like off-putting and,
it's proper
and
creepy.
Offensive and creepy than the kills themselves.
You genuinely feel like the guy, the man on the phone, is like a predator. Like you feel like he is a fucking threat. That's not a, just because he's a menacing guy, like the shape or something like that, but because it's like, I don't know, man. I think we've all known enough men and women and have seen enough things in real life to where when we see the like the phone call that happens in one of the first scenes of the movie and it's panning the slow shot through all the young women's face
each one, yeah,
and listening to the shit he says, it's like, oh my God, it's really disturbing. Way yes. more disturbing than any gore or blood that really was absent from the film, actually.
Yeah, no, that first scene with the first phone call with Barb on the phone, you know, giving him sass back because she's one of the older ones and she's been drinking. But yeah, I mean, you didn't hear language like that in
not
films,
especially not out of women, young women, like
yeah,
college aged women,
yeah,
on screen, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly meant what he was saying on the phone, but you're also
oh, no,
correct with that. Barb is
just like all the writing, yeah,
well.
She's
yeah. The writing in general, but, and man, it's, this is one of those movies where it's hard to watch, where it's like, oh, okay, that's why this movie exists 5-10 years later. Like the influence this movie has is so obvious. I mean, for me, like When a Stranger Calls, like, come on.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of connectivity there. I don't know. Did you get any of that trivia?
What trivia was there actually? What do you mean?
Okay, so like When a Stranger Calls.
Like in When a Stranger Calls, it has references to this?
No. So there's interconnectivity that I got to research before I speak too out of school. But like Bob Clark did Black Christmas.
Right.
He also then was seeking the rights to do a follow-up film called Halloween, which was going to be another film that revolved around the holiday that was capitalizing on like the horror movie craze. He ended up not doing that because he took the like screenwriting options for When a Stranger Calls, I think, after the success of Black Christmas.
Oh.
And then he like ended up not finishing When a Stranger Calls. Somebody else picked that up, and then that was the one that stars, what's her name from Princess Bride? Miracle Max's wife, Carolyn... Whatever. Anyway, Carol Kane. It's Carol Kane,
yeah.
1978.
Yeah.
When a Stranger Calls, and then John Carpenter came in and bought the rights to the film title Halloween and made
Halloween.
The Michael Myers
what?
Film Halloween. And all of this happened like within 5 years. And honestly, I probably told this story horribly. It's out there. It's easily researched. It's what I should have done before I started talking about it on a podcast. But if you're interested in that, go ahead and check it out. But yeah,
that's
it definitely has.
I'm gonna look into that. That's wild.
It definitely has a lot of influence over both of those films.
Yeah.
And then it also has a lot of influence just over the genre, totally. But I think of films like in the early proto, slasher vein, like Slumber Party Massacre or Tourist Trap, like some of these types of movies.
Yeah, even like Maniac.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
POV, more POV stuff.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff before it really gets into like the protagonist being the villain type of Freddy, Jason, Chucky, kind of like the last days of a slasher, but like those early years when it was a little bit more the giallo formula.
Yeah, I mean Sorority House Massacre.
Right.
That's a series. There's like three or four of them at least.
All the axe to grind, the town that dreaded sundown. It's one of those, but it's better than all of them, I think, personally. And I like a lot of those movies I just mentioned.
Yeah.
Rob, we're rambling. Jump in here, buddy.
Yeah, this is Rob's first time seeing this. Michael and I are relatively familiar. You've seen it the most.
I've seen it a lot. I like this movie.
I think I saw it for my first time 3 or 4 years ago, and I've watched it every holiday season since, and I will continue to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah, first watch, pretty good. Not exactly what I expected. I did expect a lot more gore, to be honest. But it is funny, and it is a good flick. And like you guys say, the characters are memorable. I couldn't say I would name all of the sorority girls, but the mom, sorority house mom, like Mrs. Mack, she's hilarious.
She's great.
That like extra strength Sherry the whole time.
She's
like,
got one everywhere.
Trying to like hold things together, which is just like a good.
She's going through like the bookshelf. She's A, B for booze.
Yeah, it's like alcoholism is funny, but like, but kind of in like an old vaudevillian sort of way.
Yeah, and she's like Irish. It's not a stereotype or anything.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, it's.
But she, she's like responsible for keeping track of all these women and their morals. And I don't know. I had the option to, or not the option. I had the chance to do some VR with a friend or relative over the holiday, and it felt very much like that scene
where
he's like climbing. Yeah, the POV where he's like climbing up the lattice work and everything.
I thought you were about to say you did a Black Christmas VR game, and that I was about to be like, "What?
Wild.
Where? No, I want to do that."
It was like a rock climbing,
so crazy,
you know, that kind of traditional. But overall, like, I don't know, it was a good watch. You guys kind of said it all, so
really got it too. It's wrapping up. What'd you give it?
No, come on, it's been 10 minutes.
So this movie, it has a pretty good cast, I think, of. A lot of the genre actors get a little bit extra like bias in my opinion, maybe. But whenever I see a name like John Saxon on credits, I get kind of pumped. He's in it.
And he's so handsome.
He's, dude, John Saxon, I tell you what, it's 60s, 70s John Saxon is a fucking smoke show. He stays handsome for a long time, obviously. But like some of his 60s stuff that he was doing in Italy, like, God, the dude is... attractive. And he speaks like four languages, and he's a movie star, and he's fucking
he's a
badass.
Hot.
So he plays the lieutenant in this, and he's kind of the man who eventually will be tasked with finding the missing sorority girl, Claire, after she fails to meet up with her father when they have plans to go away for the holiday. Like, he's going to pick her up from the sorority home or whatever, meet her somewhere.
She's kind of painted early on as kind of like a good girl, a little bit of an outcast. They're having a party. She's the first one to go upstairs to bed. She's meeting her dad at the train station. I think she's supposed to be there at 1, and it's like a big deal that she's even 30 minutes late. You know, like, her dad is concerned because
he's a
it's Claire.
Ass.
Like, she wouldn't be late. Which is like what kind of kicks off the main plot.
Claire is played by Lynn Griffin, who I don't know.
So pretty.
She's really pretty. I don't know a lot about her or her career, but a quick little look on the internet suggests that she was in like 6 other Christmas movies way later, like in the 2000s, like one called Cabin Connection, It Takes a Christmas Village, Santa Baby 2, and like, so I don't know, is she like reprised?
Sound amazing.
cashed in.
Sounds like something we would watch.
Those types of movies you guys would watch. She's cashed in maybe on that, or maybe she has some other acting credits I don't know about. But she was good in this movie. She doesn't stick around long. She's mostly remembered for being the girl in the bag in the rocking chair,
which is so sick. Good. We'll get into more of that.
Go ahead,
later.
Get into it. Because it's iconic. I mean, you're not giving anything away, right? It's in the first 10 minutes, and it's
like
on the cover.
You want to talk about the first kill?
Sure. Okay. Why not? We'll set up the kill. How do we lead into it? What's going on? I guess we've talked about...
So Claire's upstairs by herself. We kind of get an inkling that...
Take us from the beginning. We just jumped around. Take us from the beginning. I want to hear you talk.
From the very beginning?
You can do it in a few sentences, but yeah.
I mean, it's the... We're in the sorority house. Well, you know, I'll get to that part. And it's we're introduced by these group of girls who are on the phone. The phone rings, and it's evident that this is not the first phone call of this type that they've gotten in the night. And
well,
it's
the girl who picks it up
last, and it
says like, "Come back." He's called again. It's the moaner.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Because Jess
like,
answers
it's the
moaner. Phone.
It's the moaner.
They've given him a name.
Yeah. Like this is not the first time it's happened. And as Barb ends up getting a phone, who is just a member of the sorority. She's obviously, you know, older, like kind of like the bitchy one. You know, there's gotta be one. She's always got a drink.
She's Julian.
Yeah, she's kind of mean. She's kind of mean to Claire and like kind of harsh. But she's on the phone and she's like, you know, what do you want, you creep? And there's like a crazy voice. Like you said, I do think it can be kind of unintentionally funny at sometimes, but for the most part, and especially like in 1974, like it's creepy and he
vulgar.
Says very vulgar things, that I probably shouldn't even say what I won't, but you know, very sexual and violent things, kind of like in the vein of like Linda Blair while she's,
possessed
by the fucking devil. Like way more, I think of When a Stranger Calls 2008. I feel like that movie's really popular. Like turn that shit up to 12. But anyway, he's super nasty, like blah blah blah. Barb doesn't seem to care. Like we get a call like this all the time.
Yeah,
like
twice a week.
Yeah, I'm from the city. This guy's amateur hour.
But I don't remember what Barb says. She does. She throws a couple insults, and she throws one, and he does a crazy thing with his voice. He does a bunch of different voices. You're not sure what's going on, if there's more than one person involved, if he's, you know, just insane. But Barb gets a jab in, and then the phone call ends with just him not doing a voice, is going, "I'm going to kill you." Click. And Barb doesn't
care.
Barb doesn't care, nor...
She's a little tuned up, too.
Nor even... say that to any of the other girls, because they would maybe have gotten more concerned more quickly if they had. But you know, Barb's kind of like, you know, fuck that creep, we're having a party, whatever.
Let me jump in real quick. Barb is played by Margot Kidder, who is famous for being Lois Lane in the Dean Cain, not the Dean Cain, sorry, in the Christopher Reeve's like Superman movies.
Oh.
No, she's like the Lois Lane for a lot of people.
That's cool. I didn't
it's
know.
It's like her and Terry Hatcher. She was the one in the movie. So she's in Superman like 1, 2, and 3, I believe. And then Jess is played by Olivia Hussey, who is actually in the news now. She is suing Paramount Pictures.
For a nude scene? Is that this
yes.
thing? From like the 60s?
Yes. Oh, from Romeo and Juliet, 1965 or 1964. Or maybe it was like 1960. I can't recall exactly. But it was Romeo and Juliet. Romeo and Juliet were both played by 15 and 16-year-old actors, she being one of them. And I also believe it was filmed in Canada. So the age of consent laws were like a little unclear. But like...
This film is Canadian.
This one is, yes, but I'm talking about Romeo and Juliet.
I just don't know if we mentioned that.
So because the age of consent laws were a little weird, they were nude, but then what property was distributed, like through an American, you know, distribution company, and they're minors.
It's fucking weird.
I remember watching that in like freshman English class.
Really?
Yeah, like we watched
I watched the Leo DiCaprio one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we watched that one.
I assume I watched that one as well.
And, you know, whatever. You're in high school. You get your permission slips. We've all probably seen nudity and shit in our high school films, right? Or whatever. But I don't know. 15, 16.
It's weird.
It is weird. But Olivia Hussey, yeah, she played Juliet, and she would also go on to have like a pretty solid and noted career. She was in Jesus of Nazareth, and she played the Virgin Mary. So, I mean, we're talking about someone who played Juliet in the Virgin Mary, and she's been in a handful of other things. But
so you know she's hot.
You know she's hot. You know she's pure. She's good. But, yeah, anyway,
she's great in this.
So I'm going to kill you. Barb doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. Claire goes upstairs to pack her bags because she's going to be leaving in the morning to meet her father so they can go away for the holiday. Mm-hmm. But.
You want me to go again?
Yep. Or Rob jumps in, but he's just snacking and
but,
watching.
What do you want?
But Claire is not alone. And like I said, we kind of got this idea. There's like something that happens in passing. Someone, one of the girls walks by the front door and closes it. And this is like, who the hell left the front door open? And it's just like a real quick second, but as an audience that knows what this movie is, you're like, oh, he's in the home now. He's in there. And sure enough, Claire is packing, and this is a great scene and pretty iconic as well. He's in the closet, and she's getting, you know, it's one of those you've seen it 100 times, slightly different every time maybe, of, you know, someone pulling stuff out of the closet that the killer is in and still not realizing it. But us as an audience,
we
that
have
knows
a pretty strong
there,
idea he's in there.
We can like kind of see a silhouette, and it like draws your eye there really well, because you're like, can you see him through the plastic? Or is that
just by the time he thought
your
that.
Mind? And like by the time you figure it out, she's back in the closet and she's grabbed.
So this isn't like Halloween. This is in Friday the 13th for sure. Like those are iconic kills I would think of, right? But this one's before both of that. And what he does is he grabs the like the
plastic
see-through plastic slip cover for like a
dry
suit or like
a
fucking
clothes,
a dry cleaning bag. And he puts it over her head and suffocates her.
Yeah.
Drags her up to the fucking attic.
And then we get a nice little attic door shut, which is like kind of a softer version of
a hatch door.
Leatherface slamming the door the same year. And then this is what, I mean, this is how people know this movie from the cover and these shots of he puts her in a rocking chair in the attic in a window.
Sets
with
her
the
up,
plastic
yeah.
over her face. And,
her.
And it's a big sorority house, so it's like fourth story up. Like, you probably really can't see it. And there's a good shot where, like, you're like, why can't anybody see it? And because there's even the cops are outside at one point. And it just pans back from her rocking in the window, and it's a dusty window.
So
it's
good.
An old house. There's trees in the way, and it's off of the ground, and nobody's any reason to look up there. And
it's
she's just
dark, and there's lots of lights and trees and stuff for decorations.
Because it's
too,
winter,
which would kind of
you know?
Obstruct it.
And then
she like stays up there for a while.
Yeah, a few
the
days.
Whole movie.
Yeah, the whole movies. Yeah, which is only what 3 days.
Three.
Yeah.
So
she's not really stinking yet, and also everybody's leaving.
It's cold.
Yes.
And it's cold, and she's far away. She's all the way up in the top.
Yeah, it's kind of like an end of semester, end of the year, whatever party where, as in, the people are leaving the house is supposed to pretty much be
empty. And that's why the mother, they call her Mother Mac or Miss
Mac,
comes by. She's like the house mother, the sorority house owner or something like that. We don't know exactly what
she's
her role
mother.
Is, but she's like the house mother.
We don't know for a while.
And so she's kind of watching over everything as everybody's leaving. And she knows who's supposed to be coming and who's supposed to be going. And the girls are leaving one by one. And she ends up being the one at the house when Clara's father eventually makes it to the sorority house. We don't have to go over detail, but he gets there looking for her because she wasn't where she was supposed to be to meet.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of comedy here. With Mrs. Mack, there's a lot of
comedy
all
too.
The time. Well, the slapstick too, even like with the lipstick cracking you up.
Dude, that was so good.
Oh, how she did. She did
a quarter
like
of it and then like
half
walked
a lip.
Outside.
Yeah.
Claude.
Claude.
Claudie cat.
And the cops are funny. We don't have to get too much into it, but when Barb,
the, like, worth a counter.
When Barb tells the rookie that the address is like 8 Fellatio Way or something, and he's like, and how do you spell that? And they figure that out. They are cracking it's up at awesome. Him.
Yeah, that is good. And the whole time, like, this is happening, we have Jess involved in, like, a pregnancy with her boyfriend, and she's talking about getting an abortion, and he's talking about getting married, and she's saying, like, she doesn't want to do that because she still has her dreams and she wants to finish a university. And so, like, there's some heavy things going on there. Claire's father's looking for her. Mrs. Mack, at some point along the way, is going to be one of the next victims. And then the phone rings again, and there's less and less people around, but Jess is sticking around because she doesn't have anywhere to go. So Jess ends up being the person who answers the phone again. And if you notice, the phone rings every time a kill happens.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's a tip off there. And so it's the same voice. It's another lewd call, another nasty, derogatory phone call. And at this point, there's a missing girl. Dad has put in a police report. Peter's
been a prick.
Oh, Peter, her boyfriend, has been a prick. But yeah.
So she's like on, she's on edge.
She's
probably not feeling,
and she's
the
being
safest.
Harassed, and now, like, people are missing. And so eventually the cops, who John Saxon's lieutenant, ends up, you know, getting the idea, like, hey, maybe there's something to look into here. And more things happen, and it leads up to a wiretapping, right?
Yes.
Like, can we jump up to that point?
Yes.
Wiretapping.
And I love this. Too.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I just love the, I don't know how it works or what it is, but the guy watching the really old, like, computer room that does the tracing of it with all the clicking machines going
on.
And
like a reel to reel down the road.
Like, that is, I like that kind of shit. And it's,
you
like,
love proto computer.
It's just cool. I mean, give me that instead of, like, some fake computer interface that didn't exist at the time, which
Lawnmower Man?
You know what I mean? I thought that was really cool. I don't know a lot about wire tappings, but I thought it was cool. It, like, showed them go to the house and, like, actually, you know, take apart the phone and, like, do it.
Tap,
like,
the wire.
It's not something that's just, like, bullshit done. We got cameras everywhere and stuff. I like that aspect of it.
Even though this movie is,
it, like, seemed real.
Gritty, and it can make you uncomfortable, and it's fucking dark. We'll get to it, but it doesn't really have a happy ending. This movie is at times watching a lot more like a mystery, like we said. And I watched it with some people who aren't necessarily horror movie fans, but it's, you know, it's a Christmas movie.
I'm a horror movie fan.
I've watched it with other people.
Oh, okay.
But if I were to say, like, it's a good holiday movie, like, it doesn't necessarily have a lot of holiday themes. It's easy to forget that it's a Christmas movie, and it's easy to forget that it's, like, a horror movie, because a lot of times it's just kind of like a suspense and a drama and a mystery.
That takes place during a holiday.
Yeah, and, like, sometimes the holiday is less of a character than it could have been.
Right.
You know what I mean? But there are some good scenes of, like, the vulgar phone calls happening, and then in the outside the house you can hear, like, carolers. It's so good!
There's a kill happening during the actual... carolers, but we'll go. There is a pretty big gap in between first and second kill.
Yeah.
And the second kill is Miss Mack, the house mother. And it's really just wrong place, wrong time. It's just, she's the one that ends up in the attic first, and it kind of seems like whoever goes up there is going to be next, and it's because she's looking for Claire's cat, because she's drunk and she wants to say goodbye to it. So she's looking for Claude, and she hears a noise in the attic and ends up going there. And we get a fun. He's up there, like, holding this, like, I don't even know, like, an industrial hook. Like, what are those called?
Is it like a fireplace instrument? Or?
No.
What
it's
he
like
has
a,
and he drops and let goes. But
it's like
a
pulley
a,
with a hook.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's.
I don't know why it's in the attic.
Yeah.
You know, but it swings.
It's a cool
it,
kill.
It swings in there and it gets her. And yeah, and the gore
but you get to
is
see her get
screen.
Sucked up through the. Cause it, so this is the she way the attic up. Is. It's like one of those attics with, like, a false ceiling that you push
that
up
you push
and
up
slide
and
back.
Yeah.
And then you can pull the, like, ladder down and hop up in there. Yeah, I'm pantomiming big time.
I'm just glad we did that. You hit the lamp.
But, And so she eventually pushes up the false bottom and then walks up there, and we can see him. We don't ever actually see him, but we see him holding just the hook, which is perfectly lit, and he throws it, and then we get the outside shot of her feet, and her ankles just get lifted straight up, and then the lid shuts again. It's kind of so good that you said it's like the Leatherface slamming the door.
Yeah, it almost is similar, and the hooks, too.
Yeah, exactly. And again, no gore on screen, but it seems so fucking brutal, right? Yeah. It's hopeless and dark, and there's not a lot of like music in the house. Like, when they're in the house, there's not a lot of music, which makes it like daunting, I feel.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was, I mean, it was definitely on purpose in the movie. I'm not trying to get inside of a fictional killer's brain, but I love how he's there waiting and can kill her at any moment, but he lets her have this 30, 40 seconds of true fear where she's looking around in this dark attic and can't see anything, and even waits
sees,
for her.
But
to
she sees
see
Claire first, yeah.
Yeah,
and, she
and as soon as
realizes
she sees Claire is when he
she need well go. No she starts to turn around, so like she tenses up, she sees Claire, and she's like, she has this oh fuck moment, like
I need to go,
I don't need to be here, maybe I'm not alone, and kind of turns around slowly, and it's almost like as soon as that she gets that 180 point, boom
yeah, he waits for it,
which is like good. Yeah, I don't know, another phone call, more lewd shit. Peter's being a cunt, and so we start to think,
fuck you, Peter,
because he's like starting to demand, like he's starting to demand that she's gonna drop out and he's gonna quit the academy and move in and have a house. They're gonna buy a house, and she's like, I don't want to marry you, and he's like, no, we're going to start a family, it's okay, and I'm blah blah blah, and she's like,
I
do not want to do this, Peter, I love you, I'm sorry, but we're not doing it. And then he's in the house and doesn't like mention being in the house. And this is right after she gets off the phone with the second phone call. This is with the kill, the second phone call. And then he comes down the stairs, and we kind of think that it's like a POV thing where the killer is going to maybe get Jess, but it's Peter. And he's like, oh, I was asleep upstairs, I got tired waiting for you, I hope you don't mind. She's like, why'd you sneak up on me? Why didn't you tell me that was you? Like, what are you doing? Why are you being weird? And we kind of think it's Peter, right? Is that what we're supposed to think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I think so. Yeah, as a first time watch, I think, I think so.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, he obviously ends up being our red herring, but then this puts a question in everyone's mind, like, oh, is like, is it Peter? Is he capable of doing this? We're not sure, because he's not developed a whole lot. We know he's like
a boyfriend.
Apparently, a really good like concert pianist, like. He is, we see him like in a huge hall playing piano for
three
old men,
old
and like
men,
in
professors or whatever.
Yeah, we can only assume that, you know, he's kind of like hot shit at what he does, but that's it. That's really all we know about him. So we don't know what he's capable of, which makes him a good red herring, because could he kill because he's so upset?
Well, we know that he's passionate because he's chosen to offer to walk away from all of that. To have this life with her, and she says no again. And so, like, we know he's passionate, and at the very least, that poses a threat, right? Because he's by proximity one of the only potential perpetrators.
Yeah, because I guess I just even thought at this point, Jess isn't 100% certain that anyone has been killed yet.
No.
So, in her mind, she's like, oh, Peter's here. Like, he's probably the one that's been calling me, and for her so far that's the biggest threat are the phone calls, because she doesn't know about the murders that actually occurred, which makes it even more so in her
she
mind.
She thinks it's weird that nobody knows where Claire is and Claire's dad's coming around, and they are doing the wiretaps to see if there's something correlate, but like
there's definitely a possibility
no, like,
that danger happened, and there's like a murder of a little girl in a park nearby
that's happening like right now though, like right as this is happening. I think this is kind of when everybody starts to go, oh, shit. Because now we're also like, where's Miss Mac?
Yeah.
So now we're kind of, but you know, the whole adage is like, no body, no murder.
Right.
So like, nobody's been found yet. We don't know what's going on, but it's getting fucky. And Olivia Hussey plays Jess is getting really uneasy, even in her own home.
And really, it doesn't the cops don't intervene until it's Phil's boyfriend.
Phil's boyfriend.
Like Barb's boyfriend. Barb's boyfriend.
Who shows up as like she's not no, with
Phil. Phil is one of the girls.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
But I think it is Barb's boyfriend who shows up at the police station and is pissed and is like, why isn't anyone doing anything about this? Like, blah, blah, blah. And he's like yelling at like the rookie cop that's like an idiot. And it's like funny.
Yeah, like the deputy.
And the lieutenant, if I remember correctly, the lieutenant like overhears him yelling and is like, go get me that file, and looks at it and is like, you're like, you fucking idiot. Like, you know, there's a girl just got murdered. Someone's missing. You're not looking into this. So that's when they go to the house and they tap the phones. And then we get the classic, this is going to be hard, but when he calls again, you got to keep him on the line for as long as possible because it's the old way of doing it. Like, it's going to take like a minute to trace where this call is coming from.
Yeah. And, you know, without fail, he's going to call again, and they do manage to keep him on the phone for a while, but not quite long enough the first time.
First two times he calls, and yeah, you keep on thinking he's going to get him, and we get these shots that I love of the guy running down the aisles of all the things clicking, and then it ends, and he's like, and they've got to call and be like, I'm so, and like, we didn't get him, like, you've got to keep him there longer. But I think it's the second time that he says something that Peter said to her when he was there. So she starts freaking out. And
yeah, it's like the same type of verbiage.
And the lieutenant catches on to her reaction to it and is like, I think there's something you're not telling me. And eventually she's like, he said like the exact thing that Peter said to me at the house like hours before or whatever, which is when she really thinks, and like we kind of think like, oh shit, like it is Peter. Like, how is it not Peter? He said words that, like, how would anyone else know, like, blah, blah, blah. But then she comes to this realization that one of the calls came in when Peter was at the house.
So it can't be Peter.
So it can't be Peter.
And also, if the educated, you know, viewer can put together that he heard what was said to Jess, and because he's in the house.
Yeah, we know he's in the house.
We know he's in the house because we watched him climb up and the door was open and he's in the attic and he's been hanging out. So we're kind of putting this together. And, you know, this is where we say, like, oh, the Carol Kane When a Stranger Calls, because eventually, not soon or not too far from here. And if you guys haven't seen this movie, we were giving away a lot of spoilers. It's like 50 years old. Check it out.
I was about to say, 50 years old if you haven't fucking seen it.
Yeah, but watch it, and we'll, you know, there's a lot we haven't said that's worth watching. But eventually, it's the classic, oh, we got the call trace. We know where he's coming from. Oh, where's it coming from? Bob, 1234 Main Street. It ain't coming from 1234 Main Street. That's where it's going. And he goes, it's coming from there, too. And oh, fuck. It's coming from inside the house. Yeah, so, you know, but can we get there or will it be too late, you know?
Well, it's up to that rookie cop. He, you know, puts him in charge and he's like, if you fuck this up, I'll kill
you. He's like, you got to call her and just, you know, try to keep her on the phone and make sure she's safe or whatever, but don't tell her that the killer's in the house because she's going
to
freak out.
He's supposed to call and say, Jess, like, don't ask her any questions. Just walk out the front door. But we know Jess pretty well at this point.
And we know the deputy.
She's worried about her friends. She's resilient. She's smart. She's strong. She's sexy. She's badass. So she doesn't leave. She goes to the front door. She screams the names of Barb and Claire and Miss Mack, which we didn't even talk about Barb's death, but whatever. And she decides to go up there, which is the complete opposite of what she was supposed to do. Come on, Barb. And we get like an interaction between killer and final girl, and
final girl.
We still don't see him, which is great. It's kind of like that creature feature thing where it's like, you know, you don't. Yeah, you can't put that. The less you see of it, the scarier it is, like, kind of thing. And she ends up hiding in the basement, and there's someone at the window. being like, Jess, like, are you okay? And we realize it's Peter. So then again, we're like, well, we know it's not Peter, but this is not, he's not making himself look good to Jess or the cops or anyone else. Like, why the fuck is he there? Why does he know she's in the basement? Blah, blah, blah. Ends up kicking the little window to go down, yeah, and is like, why are you scared? Like, what's wrong? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then we get, like, back to the cops, and, like, we find out, well, they find out that she didn't actually leave the house, so, you know, they've all got to get over there and see what's going on, and they go over there, and they find Peter on top of Jess, and at first they both look dead.
Right.
But then we see it's just Peter who's dead, and she's been killed by Jess with a fire poker. And there's some blood on him, and it's not great, honestly. It's kind of chalky and, like, bright red.
It's jello, yeah.
And then, honestly, we get one of my favorite endings to a horror movie that I've seen in a while, and maybe, like, it's such a great... I mean, first of all, like, red herring, it's a great shot. They think they've got their man, and there's this slow pan that we talked about a little bit earlier of the camera that starts on Claire's face in the rocking chair upstairs, still in the plastic with eyes open, mouth open, like, it's creepy.
And she's rocking.
And she's moving. She's rocking in the chair, and the camera just zooms out and out. And you can see her the whole way, and it's so hard not to keep looking at her because there's what you said, like,
because you want to keep trying to see her.
How is no one else seeing her? Like, I can see her.
You can, but you can also see how, like,
you can't see
her. Why would you ever
look up there or think that that's a dead body?
Right.
But we see there's so much going on outside. There's hustle bustle of cops and ambulances and dads and sorority girls, and there's, like, stuff going on, and then we hear the phone ring again, which is
because somebody's died, because somebody's got murdered,
because someone just got murdered.
Yeah, and it's like, fucking, I don't know what it is. I almost started doing, like, I don't know, Christmas carols, but, like, the Grinch song, no, 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 but it's some sort of, like Hark the Herald Angels Sing or something. Like, there's carolers out there.
I think it is Hark the Herald Angels Sing,
and they're just singing. And the credits start to roll, and you're all the way zoomed out, and you're on the street, and you're looking at it, and, like, there's the twinkle of the Christmas lights, and it's just like, oh, fuck.
It's like, it's not over.
And then the...
Yep, and then the phone rings.
And it goes for so long. There's, like, no answer machines. It's 1974. The fucking phone rings for, like, 2 minutes. Black screen. Credits are still done, and it's
the,
like...
The music stops.
So
and
good.
It's just the phone ringing through the credits.
It's a great, great,
such a
credit.
Good ending.
I like it.
I like it.
Yeah, it's good. Would you rate it?
I gave it a 3
out of 100.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, did you watch the
unrestored version?
The unrestored.
Unrestored version.
Yeah. No, I like this movie a lot. I'll go first. I give this. This is my. This is 1A favorite horror movie around the holidays. This and Jack Frost are both really good. They're way different. This is a much better film.
Yeah.
Jack Frost makes me laugh out loud really, really hard. But this is, like, fuck, a good movie, man. We'll give it an 88.
I'm a big fan of this movie. Like I said, once I discovered it, I've watched it every holiday since, and I will continue to do so. I love the influence that this movie has had. It's hard not to love these first couple North American slashers that kind of helped develop, you know, my favorite genre of movie. So it's hard to dislike a movie like this. You know, came out same year as Texas Chainsaw, all that. Gotta love it. Gotta love. We didn't touch on this. We don't need to. Gotta love the parallels of how scary this must have been coming out, that they had to postpone a release because Ted Bundy literally pretty much did the same fucking thing for real in Florida. Went into a sorority house and beat a couple of girls to death with like a piece of a tree.
Yeah, so I think this actually didn't come out in the theatrically US. Until like 75 or 76, but it was filmed and released like in the festivals and right before it was supposed to premiere nationally. The Ted Bundy crimes had occurred. So
I mean, that's got to add just another layer of real fear for young women and
anybody.
And anybody. But great movie. We've talked about it, and I gave it an 88 as well, actually. So
good first watch, but honestly, like, all Jallo, like, give me more gore on screen. I don't want to just see like kills off screen and blood or whatever. But the rocking chair and like the plastic bag kill was pretty cool.
Yeah.
A lot of good comedy in it, like more than I was expecting by a large margin. So I don't know. I can't really say much more than you guys have. This is 78.
That's not bad. Would you continue? Would you consider like watching it every holiday season? Could you watch this once a year? No.
No, I don't think so. Like, there's no nostalgia for it, and that's a big part of holiday movie watching for me.
That's
and
fair.
Beyond that, it needs to be pretty specific.
There's no princes. There's no ghosts.
It's not even that. It's just like you guys say.
I mean, there's a big part of that.
You kind of forget that it takes place during Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
And not that other, like, Die Hard is not, like, super heavy on the holidays, but that has some nostalgia to it. So I will watch Gremlins, but this one, after the second phone call, like, it's lewd and it's disturbing, but it kind of loses its effect.
Yeah.
And I'm just not really a fan of Jallo in the genre. So it's not really for me, but like, again, like, Mrs. Mack is a fucking all-star. She's great. I love her.
Yeah, she was great.
And a decent flick. So, yeah, good to check out. I don't know about watching it every year.
Fair enough.
It's a good one.
You heard it there. What are we doing next week?
Elmies! Well, we got to wrap up the year in season 3 with the second annual Elmies. So we will be giving the people what they want. And we will not promise we can't bitch slap each other, you know? We may or may not. Will Smith.
Wait, what?
It's Will Smith thing.
Oh. You can slap me.
Hell yeah, that's hot. But yeah, I don't know. We'll do the same categories we did last year, maybe one or two more, and you can vote along with us. It means nothing anyway, and we've already picked the winners. We haven't talked about it yet, but we will.
We will.
Dollar per text message per use.
Yeah, unless you're
to vote.
Unless you're a platinum subscriber.
Yeah, to vote.
Platinum subscription is on sale right now. It's 50% off, so it's only $200 for the season.
Yeah. So
go ahead. Just a steal.
It's half
folks.
Off.
Yeah,
steal.
Folks. Come on.
And if you are a platinum subscriber, then your text messages will only be 85 cents. Is a steal. So please sign up for that.
I mean, you're going to vote for every category. So you're going to. It's a lot of votes. You're saving.
It adds
you're
up. It adds up.
You're making money.
You're practically making money.
Well, if you're a real fan, you're going to be texting all the time.
All the time.
Because you have our number.
Homemade Simpson stuff.
Oh.
But yeah, we're going to do the Elmies, and then we're going to start
Season four.
Mordor.
Mordor.
The last season. The final.
We're going to close
ring.
The Mordor.
Beyond the Mordor.
Mordor is closing season 4.
Season 4, Mordor.
We started the Chrome Door. We're ending at the Mordor.
They're both really hot.
All of us got toe tags and tattoos.
We might even kiss on camera once.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Three way.
But yeah, tune in next week for the Elmies. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to argue until we reach a conclusion.
I'm going to be right. They're going to argue. And it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 Thanks, guys.
As always.
Thank you.
Thank you. Money.
two films. Come on, watch two films. If you're scared, don't come over here. 13 AM. 13 AM. 13 AM. 13 AM. Pull up with us, watch two films. Come on, watch two films. If you're scared, don't come over here. Thirteen AM.